Today's GeoQuiz takes us back 2 centuries. English novelist Charles Dickens was born 200 years ago today. But as the Archbishop of Canterbury said today, Dickens remains relevant to this day because he wrote about what it means to be human.
The truth about human beings is more grotesque and bizarre than we can imagine. And Dickens's generous embrace of human beings does not arise out of a chilly sense of what is due to them, but out of a celebratory feeling that there is always more to be discovered.
Now, in January 1842, Dickens came to discover what America was all about. He wanted to see Niagara Falls with his own eyes. He also traveled to a historic city near Boston to see how textile workers, especially women, were treated in the crowded mills. Name that city, or we will, when we speak with a historian about Dickens in America in about 5 minutes. It's time to answer the GeoQuiz. It's inspired by the celebrations marking the 200th anniversary of the birth of novelist Charles Dickens today. We think of Dickens as being quintessentially English, from that island over there. But let's turn that notion on its head for a moment. Earlier in the show, we asked you where Dickens was in January 1842 and what was on his mind. Let me put the question to Natalie McKnight. She's a professor of humanities at Boston University. Dickens came to the USA in 1842. Natalie, first of all, why did he come?
You know, it was not unusual for British writers to come to America and to do a tour and to look at some of the institutions we had, like prisons and insane asylums, industry, for instance, and write about it. So he hoped to make some money from a book he would write about the tour, which was American Notes, which he did publish. I think he was also fascinated as somebody who looked at these kinds of institutions in his own country and wanted something to compare them to.
Did his name and reputation precede him? Did people here know who he was?
Absolutely. He was already a huge pop culture celebrity when he came here. There were huge balls in his honor. People would throng him on the docks and try to grab fistfuls of fur from his coat. He had these crowds everywhere he went. So it was an enormous event for Americans to experience Dickens.
Now, apparently one of the things Dickens was concerned about was the way his work was being pirated. So he was kind of already on to intellectual property control.
Absolutely. Americans thought that was indiscreet for him to make complaints about his work being pirated, and it caused some rifts in some of his relationships here, and he writes about it, well, throughout his life, actually, but one of the ironies of him worrying about piracy, and of course he had every right to worry about piracy, was that actually he pirated several different texts in his book American Notes after he returned. So one of the last chapters in American Notes is about slavery, and Dickens was horrified with our practice of slavery, but most of his slavery chapters also basically plagiarized from slave pamphlets that had appeared about runaway slaves. So he did some of that pirating himself.
Now, another stop while he was in Boston was the Early Perkins School for the Blind, where he observed a blind and deaf girl named Laura Bridgman, and he wrote about her. What was his interest in her?
Well, Dickens had a lifelong fascination with people who seemed to be trapped inside themselves or imprisoned in some way. So I think he found in prisoners and madmen and the deaf, dumb, and blind people who had this profound isolation. And he was very moved by Laura Bridgman, and he writes about her very poignantly in American Notes. If you don't mind, I could read a brief passage.
Yes, please.
He describes her in terms of a solitary prisoner. He says, "There she was before me, built up, as it were, in a marble cell, impervious to any ray of light or particle of sound, with her poor white hand peeping through a chink in the wall, beckoning to some good man for help that an immortal soul might be awakened." It's a beautiful passage, and that chink that he refers to there is like she's trying to find some kind of, you know, avenue into the human world. That's an image he uses again and again in reference to people who are suffering from madness or prisoners in isolation. So I think he saw them all in the same kind of dire state of alienation and isolation. And he was tremendously impressed by the work Samuel Gridley Howe had done with Laura to enable her to communicate with the outside world.
There's an important connection to Laura Bridgman, because one could argue that if Dickens hadn't written about her, there wouldn't have been a Helen Keller, and it's not just because attitudes toward the blind were changing in the mid-19th century. Explain that.
Yes, well, of course, there would have been a Helen Keller, but we probably wouldn't have known about her. When Helen Keller's parents read Dickens's book, American Notes, about his trip to America, they read about his encounter with Laura Bridgman and how Perkins Institute had helped her communicate with the outside world and have a real human life. And they were so excited and so hopeful upon reading this encounter that they went to Perkins and found at Perkins a tutor, Ann Sullivan.
The miracle
to tutor,
worker.
Yeah, the miracle worker, Ann Sullivan, to tutor Helen Keller. And then Helen Keller, of course, through Ann Sullivan's tutoring, became someone who also could escape that profound prison and communicate with the outside world. So it was Dickens's American Notes that directed the Keller family to Perkins and enabled them to get the kind of help for Helen that she needed.
Fascinating connection. Now, one of the other stops on Dickens' tour of the U.S. was a visit to the New England textile mills to observe working conditions.
Right.
Tell us where he went.
Well, he went to the Lowell fabric factories and for the boots factory, for instance.
In Lowell, Massachusetts,
which is now a national park, the Lowell National Park. And he really was impressed by Lowell. He saw in Lowell the capacity to have industry run in a humane fashion because Lowell was really a model industrial community. They had tried to establish a practice where they had the young women who worked in the mills living in boarding houses nearby the mills, and the boarding houses would have pianos, and the young women ran a periodical. They put together a magazine called The Lowell Offering in which they'd put poetry and stories, and they would attend a lecture series. So it wasn't just this brutish, slavish labor with a kind of slum-like conditions in terms of their living quarters. It really was a hopeful presentation of what industry could be if it was done well. So he was very inspired by seeing these young women working in a factory, and they looked healthy, and they were attractive, and they were nicely dressed, and their boarding house was clean and neat, and they had music, and they had lectures, and they had this magazine. It made him think that maybe industry didn't have to be as brutal and dehumanizing as he had seen in places in England.
And for our listeners, connecting GeoQuiz clues to an answer, Professor McKnight just gave it. It is Lowell, Massachusetts, a 19th century manufacturing hub. That's the answer to our GeoQuiz today. Natalie McKnight teaches about Dickens and the humanities at Boston University. Thank you very much.
Thank you.